Thank you very much, Rabbi Levin. Good evening. Since we've moved here 3 or 4 years ago, my wife and I have been very significant admirers of the special nature of the Highland Park Edison community. And certainly Rabbi Lubin's fingerprint, handprint, is all over that special character. So it's an honor to be standing here at your lectern. And that segues into, in general, the Highland Park community. I never heard of such an organization like ACT. And you have a Matzah Shabbos, where throughout America the pizza shops are full. And it's really not a very popular time to go and work on what is not a very popular subject. Basically, you could call it Musar. And to have a nice turnout that we have is, I think, is very significant, and it says a lot about the community. I want to thank Mr. Rosen and the committee for inviting me, and I hope from the words I'll be able to help out in some measure this wonderful organization. A little over a year ago, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post about the victim of a terrorist bombing several years back that was rushed into the emergency room, one of the great medical centers in Eretz Yisrael, and died. And the lead doctor said that something just gripped him, and he said he wasn't going to stand for this. And he cut open the chest of this terrorist victim while ordering a shot of adrenaline, and he began to massage his heart, and he brought it back to life. This article in the Jerusalem Post was written at the time that this dead man had subsequently fathered a child. And I was thinking, how did that doctor feel? He walks around for the rest of his life knowing that there's a whole family that he kept on this planet. There are children and grandchildren that will be here just because of him. If I had that zuchus, if I had that power, if I had that potential, if I could do that, wow, but I'm not a doctor. So tonight, I'm here to say that I do have the opportunity. You have the opportunity. We have that exact same opportunity. Nothing less. And I'm not being dramatic. Moves v'chayim b'yad haloshon. Famous pasuk. A verse that normally we only expand on one part of it. Moves b'yad haloshon. Death is in the hand of the tongue. That imagery is very clear to us. We understand it very well. Chayim b'yad haloshon. Life is in the hand, or is the work of the tongue. I saw an article by Mendel Weinbach. He alerted me to an incredible medrash, Yalkut Shimoni. It says two words on that pasuk in Mishlei. He says, Mavis v'chayim, life and death. is Mitztara Umakirin. What does that mean? So on the bottom of the Medrash, two words to translate those two words. Kaf Visakin. A spoon and a knife. And again, the knife, we understand that. The analogy to a knife, the tongue can be a killer. A malicious tongue. Even a loose tongue. Be the sharpest dagger. What is the imagery of the spoon? What is the metaphor to the life-giving nature of the tongue? What is the spoon? So Baruch Hashem, we're learning Baba Basra this year. And there's a Gemara in Baba Basra with a comment from Tosfos that I think explains exactly what that metaphor of a spoon is. Tesam et beis in Baba Basra, Amar Reb Yitzchok, kol hanosein pruta la'ani. One who gives some tzedakah to a poor person, mizborach b'sheish brachos, is blessed. Six different items. V'ham b'faisal b'dvarim, and one who appeases him, one who comforts him with words, mizborach b'yud aleph brachos. He gets 11 blessings. And the Gemara goes on to bring two verses from the Navi Yeshaya to prove 6 brachos, 11 brachos. Let's take a look at the quote which is supposed to show us that there are 11 brachos for the comforting words. Pasuk says, V'safek l'ro'ev nafshecha. One who draws out l'ro'ev to the hungry, his soul. If you will draw out to the hungry, your soul. The nefesh na'ana tasbia, and the afflicted spirit, the afflicted soul, you will satiate. Then the pasuk says you will go on to have 11 different blessings. So Tosfos says, there are those that look at this and say, let's look very carefully at the language. Is this just speaking about someone who says comforting words? It doesn't seem so. Let me read the verse again. V'safek l'ro'ev nafshecha. You will draw out your soul to the hungry. That might mean kind words, comforting words to the hungry. But then it says, v'nefesh na'ana tasbia. And to the troubled soul, but to the troubled spirit, you will satiate. Satiate. So Tosfos says there were those in his day that said that has to be speaking about somebody who's actually giving food. So therefore there are two qualities which deserve the brachos. If you both give food along with a kind word. Tosfos says that if you look very carefully at the pasuk, and we won't go into it, that's nonsense. It can't mean that. The previous verse quoted is for the one who gives tzedakah, he gives food. This pasuk with these brachos is only for the person who's saying the comforting kind words. Tosfos says, what about the question asked by those in his day who wanted to say, it says tasbiyah, satiate. So it has to be that it's giving food. Tosfos says, no. Tosfos says that word tasbiyah, to satiate, can be used as a metaphor for satiating with kind words, fulfilling somebody's need, a need that they have. You feed them, you satiate them with the kind words. We see from this Tosfos, therefore, that words that have to do with food, with satiation, is a metaphor for kind words, for comforting words. Hasbia can mean satiating with words. Sustenance can mean kind words. It can mean consoling words. It can mean encouraging words. The spoon, therefore, is the metaphor for comforting words. The spoon, one can sustain a life. It's the metaphor for words which give life itself. Why does the pasuk, why does the verse repeat these two classifications? After all, that's the position of the pshat, the approach in Tosus, what Tosus was saying was incorrect. After all, it says, V'safek l'roiv nafshecha, one who draws out to the poor person his soul, v'nefesh nana tasbiyah. There seem to be two things there. So the pshat that Tosus was bringing was, yes, there's two things. There's food and there's kind words. What are these two classifications? And here I think this is very important. There are two types of needs that we have. There's a general hunger. The suffek l'roiv. One who is down. One who's dealing with hardship. One who's stressed out. He's the person that the pasuk calls hungry. Last week, my wife received a call from an old friend in our old community in Rochester, New York. There was something that this lady just had to tell us. That day, it's often very cloudy and snowy in Rochester. And that day, this woman was terribly blue. She's getting older. Her husband's getting older. She can't go out too much in the winter. She doesn't interact with other people very much. So she and her husband are there alone in the house all day, every day. And she doesn't interact. She doesn't see people. And that day, she started getting a little morose. You know, what's going to be? Me and my husband, months go by, we don't see anyone. Nobody cares, nobody, nothing. And she's just thinking, what happens when I go? What happens when he goes? We're alone. She's feeling terribly down. Apparently she stepped out for a second, she comes back, there's a message on her answering machine. It's another acquaintance, friend of ours. Left a message for them. I haven't seen you in such a long time. You bring a smile to my face whenever I think about you. I know I don't know you too well. You made such an impression on me when I met you at that bar mitzvah. And our friend Libby, she came back to herself. She was so happy. She wanted to go on and live another day. Somebody gave her chius. Somebody gave her life. Picked up a phone, said a few words, left a message. Allowed this woman to go on. That's not an isolated incident. People need to be connected. They need to be picked up. It's a universal need. Listen to her. Nachum Breslov writes, "Davar gadol ma'od." It's a very great thing, l'sameach levav b'nei Yisrael, to bring joy to the heart of another Jew. Ki rov b'nei adam, most people, meleim yisurim, are filled with different afflictions, da'agos and worry, v'tsaros b'shunos. You know, sometimes I sit in shul and I know everyone's issues. And it's very hard to look up from my seat in shul. Because this one has kids, Tsaros with his kids, And this guy, the one's got tzaras with his heart. And this one's having a fight with his wife. It's incredible sometimes. It's such a burden. Everyone has it. And sometimes he said something so true. The efshar lahem lasaper masha belibam. Often they can't even express it. I would say often people don't even understand what's bothering them. And a person comes with a delightful countenance, with a joke. He can give them life, he can pick them up. This is an incredibly important thing. When a person has the merit to bring joy to a person, he gives life and he sustains a soul. Actually, really. That is why Chazal speaks so highly of people who elevate the mood. It's an incredible Gemara in Tainus. Gemara says Rabbi Broka was walking in the Shuk and he met Elio Hanavi. They would walk hand in hand, the Gemara seems to indicate. Elio Hanavi. So he said to Elio Hanavi, tell me, is there anyone here in the Shuk that's a Ben Olam Haba? So Elio Hanavi started pointing out people. And you have to see the Gemara there. Some really incredible people. The first person he pointed out, someone that was very careful to keep the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. This same man, he saved a Bas Yisrael who was going to be violated in the worst way. It was Mosa Nefesh, put his life on the line for it. So after a while, Rabbi Broka said, anyone else here? After a while, he says, yeah, those two fellas. They're B'nai Olam Haba. So he walked over to them. And he said to them, what do you do? He says, we're comedians. We're jokers. Joker? Get out of here. Comedian? Get out of here. These are the men that Elio HaNavi says are B'nai Olam Haba. They're very special people. Very special designation. What did they do? So they explain, Mavdechina Natsivi. We see people that are down, we see people that are depressed, and we joke around. You know, in my little shul in Manalapan, there's a minig. There are those people that come early to shul. One or two of them are sitting here. One or two of them are even part of the ringleaders for this and the inspiration. And they sit around before mincha, and they're very early. And they kibitz. And they joke. And I can write the script because it's almost the same thing every time, except when one or two people who are, you know, spontaneous and they're pretty good at it are there. But it's the same script, the left side of the shul, the right side of the shul. I'm going to move over to you. How far are you going to come? I don't know if we're going to tilt left or tilt right. It's the same thing. And somebody says to me once, you know, is this right? This is what they do in shul. After all, you have to read the Chavetz Chaim Shmiras HaLashon. He elaborates on Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. He quotes Zohars, which are very, very serious about Kalas Rosh in the Beis Knesses. So somebody comes to me, is this what should be? I told them, it's a mitzvah rabbah. I told them, in my humble opinion, and I think I have this from my Rosh Yeshiva, this is an incredible mitzvah. We're not talking about, God forbid, Lashon Hara. We're not talking about things that are really what I would consider to be Kalas Rosh. We're talking about appropriate bantering. A fellow walks into shul. He's had a hard day. He might be a little elderly. He had a difficult appointment with the doctor. He walks out of shul with a smile on his face. It seems to me the Arizal said that somebody should be makabel, somebody should accept before davening to fulfill the mitzvah of a haftal l'reacha kamocha. So it seems to me that this is not a Kabbalah. This is not just accepting to do the mitzvah. This is a kiyum of the mitzvah. It's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. My Rosh Hashiva, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, he used to call his shir a three-ring circus. There were many reasons for it. But part of it is, and the shir was given in a shul, part of the reasoning was because he would come in and he would start the shir with jokes. Jokes. Just lighthearted bantering. He would engage two or three of the Bachrim each day. And he felt that was very important. A kind word. A funny word. A caring word. It gives life. It satiates a soul. According to Eliyahu HaNavi, it puts somebody in the club of Ben Olam Haba. That, I believe, is the first part of the pasuk. A person's hungry. Give him something to eat. The second part of the pasuk talks in terms of being masbiya, of satiating. That's something entirely different. That's the second function of the spoon. Because when somebody's hungry, the body is crying out for certain necessities, certain nutrients. There are certain elements, there are certain vitamins. There are some very specific needs that the body has. And when those are fulfilled, then a person is satiated. And the tongue has the ability to give just that. As v'nefesh na'ane tasbiya. Our welfare is so dependent on how other people treat us. Life itself. The Rosh Hashiva, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, pointed out a fascinating Rashi. I first saw it from the Rosh Hashiva. I see the Chavetz Chaim basically said the same thing. The topic of Egla Arufa. A corpse is found, a murder victim is found near the city. And the elders of the city, bearing some culpability for this, some responsibility, there's a whole procedure that they go through. And part of that procedure is a declaration. They have to say, Yodeinu lo shafchu es adam hazeh, we didn't kill this person. And Rashi is quick to ask on that. We didn't kill this person, the sages of the city didn't kill this person. Who would have thought that they would be responsible for killing this person? So really Rashi says, what they're saying is that they didn't see this person and let him leave this city without food or escort. That's really what the declaration is. Yodeinu lo shafchu, we didn't kill him. We didn't allow him to leave the city without food or escort. So the Rosh Hashiva said, well, if you let him go without food, you understand. He was in a weakened position, he was accosted, and he was killed. He didn't have what to eat. He was hungry. He couldn't fight. But you didn't perform the mitzvah of Levoya? You didn't escort him out of the city? Who really cares? You didn't get out and see the guy to the door? You were a little busy? You were on your computer? You didn't... That's why he was killed? And they have to make a declaration? It doesn't mean that we didn't see him all the way to the next city. There are certain halachos, how far you have to take the person. This fellow was killed way beyond the city limits. So why do they have to make this declaration? Why are they held responsible if they didn't? They were held responsible for the death if they didn't see him to the door. The answer is something I think that we intuitively understand. When somebody's mechazik us, when somebody walks with us, when we walk out the door and somebody says, why don't you take a cup of coffee? Take this along with you. And maybe you need this. Take an apple. Take this. You're not even going to eat the apple. You're not going to drink the cup of coffee. But you have chizuk. Somebody cares about me. And you walk out the door with a little more spring in your step. Now start up with me. Bring it on. backed by my friends. He's not even here. He's not even here. But I have that backing. I can hit you much harder. I can defend myself much more. It makes a difference in one's life. You know, I was discussing the concept several months ago of tochacha, of rebuke, with my dear friend Rabbi Minkowicz from the yeshiva. So he said, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva used to say that you really have to be careful bizman hazeh, this day and age, with rebuke, because people are like cobwebs. I said to him, cobwebs? I left the yeshiva in 1985. I thought the Rosh Yeshiva always said tissue paper. Cobwebs, tissue paper? Like, he says, yes. In your generation, he used to say tissue paper. Later years, cobwebs. People are so sensitive. People, many people, most people, are so insecure. They're so unsure of themselves. Try to tell them that they did something wrong. We need regularly chizuk. We need to be valued by other people. I want to tell you an incredible story which brings out the point. The story is about two people that I know very well. Rabbi and Mrs. Yanky Horowitz, Baltimore, Maryland. Two master teachers. Gitti, who's the head of a secular department, as the secular department, the secular principal, assistant principal, in the Beis Yaakov over there. She has this neat custom. At the end of every year, she writes each of her students a little note. And she teaches science, and very often it's about 90 different students that she has to write her notes to. And I've seen this. She sits there writing her notes. And her husband, Rabbi Horowitz, would often joke with her, Gitti, nobody reads those notes. Why are you spending nights writing those notes? Do you really think it makes a difference? So one day, February 2001, the Horowitzes received a letter. The letter read like this. It was a former student. At the end of the year, you wrote each girl a short note and stapled it to our report cards. I remember opening that envelope and reading what you had taken the time to write to me. Incredibly, every girl in the class felt the same way I did. Wow, this is so personalized and thought out. I'll bet no one else's letter is as special as mine. I kept that little pink envelope with me all throughout high school and seminary. And any time I need a boost of confidence, I would open it up and read what you wrote me. Dear so-and-so, I get so excited when I think of the tremendous potential you were blessed with. Please continue to use your special talents towards your learning and growing in your mitzvos and midos tovos. Don't be satisfied with mediocrity. Be the best you can be and go for the gold. Years passed. In 1998, almost 6 years after I first opened this letter, I was in a terrible car accident. For the next 8 months, I went through a painful recovery process. For the first 3 months, I did nothing but lie on my back in bed. Any millimeter of movement caused me excruciating pain. I learned to breathe taking the smallest breaths possible so that my chest would not move up and down as much. It took all of my koach, my strength, just to get through each day. One of the very first things I did was to hang out a little pink note next to my bed. Each day I would wake up, say Moda Ani, and then read the note aloud to myself. The message was clear. Someone out there believed in me and my ability to succeed and conquer every challenge in my path. 49 words, just 49 simple words. I never told you this before, Mrs. Horowitz, but you changed my life. As a teacher, I myself sometimes wonder to what extent I am making a difference in my students' lives. Let me assure you, you have no idea what a profound impact you can make on a student. I have photocopied the note for you. It's 7 years later, Mrs. Horowitz, and the ripples are still affecting me. Perhaps you will share this letter with other teachers to tell them what an awesome achrayus responsibility it is to be a teacher. And then perhaps you will hang the note in your office at school. May it always remind you how much koach, power, and hashpah, influence, you have on your talmidos. I have no words to thank you. Someone out there believed in me. Indeed, the incredible achrayus, the responsibility of a teacher, of a parent, of a sibling, of a child, to give that chizuk. You know, the Torah Avram, Rabbi Avram Grzesinski, he says in regard to v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, he says to really do chesed, to really love, you have to go and learn who that person is. You have to see what they need. A first child is not a second child, is not a third child. A mother is not a father. Each student got a different pink little note because there are different needs. Only then, says Rabbi Avram Grzesinski, can one possibly fulfill v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. There is so much that needs to be put on that spoon. But probably nothing more than love. Giving real love. Giving ahava she'eino tluya bedavar. Giving love straight, completely independent of anything else. When I was first preparing this talk, I had recently had guests in my house and they left a book. And it was so fortuitous, it was so bashert. I picked up this book in my basement and I start reading this book. And it had the story. The story of stories. The story is called The Wart King. I think we need to hear the story and review it and look at it from each side and understand it. And God willing, to put it into the lessons into practice. You see, the legend goes that there was a rich and beautiful kingdom and stretched out in all directions. But the prince of that kingdom, boy, he was terribly unhappy. He had warts all over his face. And everywhere he went, people teased him and laughed at him. So he stayed at home, in his room, alone, miserable. Upon the death of his father, the prince became the king, the wart king. And he issued a decree on the pain of death. If anyone would laugh at his warts, it'd be the end. But he still stayed in his room, ashamed and alone. On rare occasions, he would go out of his room. But of course, he couldn't be seen, so he put a bag over his head. Covered his warts. But he couldn't see anything. After many years, the king, the wart king, he heard about the wise man way up a mountain. Maybe he can help him. Maybe he can take care of his problem. So he snuck out of his castle. Nobody should see him. And he climbed up the mountain. And he stands in front of the wise man. And he pulls the bag off his head. He says, "I've come for your help." The wise man's looking at him intently. Says, "You have warts all over your face." The king flipped out. He's enraged. "No, I don't." Puts the bag over his head. "Yes, you do," the wise man insisted gently. "You do. I'll have you killed. Call your guards. Go ahead." "My guards aren't here. I climbed all the way up here alone for your help. And all you could tell me is that I have warts all over my face. How cruel you are." King took his bag, put it over his head, starts running down the hill. But he can't see. He's got the bag over his head. He starts falling and tripping. Finally, he falls down the hill, lands up in the lake. He's drowning. The bag's over his head. Wise man comes running down after him, pulls him out, takes the bag off. King looks at him and says, "You're laughing at me." "Not at all. But the boys in the village always laughed at me. And my father was ashamed of me. I'm not the boys in the village. And I'm not your father. That must have been very painful, very difficult for you." "Yes, it was. But as you can see, I'm not laughing at you. And I'm not ashamed of you." The king began to feel a little different now. And as he, looking down at the lake, he sees his reflection and he says, "I really do have a lot of warts." "I know," said the wise man. "And you don't find them disgusting?" "No. Quite frankly, I don't find my warts disgusting either. At least not anymore." "Whoa. Why don't you wear a bag over your head?" "I used to. But with the bag over my head, I couldn't see anything. And I was lonely, so I took it off. But didn't people laugh at you?" "You bet they did. I hated that, just as you do. But gradually I found a few people who didn't laugh. That made me very happy." The king is thrilled. No one had ever looked at his warts without being disgusted, without laughing at him. "I think I won't wear the bag when you're around." Wise man says, "You know, maybe when you go home, you might even leave the bag here. Do you think I'll find other people like you who won't think I'm disgusting?" King wonders. "Of course you will. And with the love of those people, you won't care when other people laugh." King drops the bag on the ground, went back to his kingdom. which was far more beautiful without the bag over his head. And he did find people who didn't mind his words at all. And for the first time in his life, he was happy. My friends, we all have warts. We all have deficiencies, things about which the bag is over the head. And we cut off other members of society. We cut off other people. We don't want them to know. We don't get too close. When the person comes into our lives and says, "What does the warts have to do with you? I love you." Warts? That's completely inconsequential. You know, I think that if each of us looks back into our life, we'll probably remember such a person who loved us just because, who accepted us just because. And they made such an incredible difference in our life. They gave us life. They were so instrumental in who we are and having us move forward. That's the spoon that gives life. That's maspia. That satiates more than anything. I just want to go back to that pasuk and bring out one more point. What is the language of the Novi Yeshaya, the Safek Leroev Nafshecha? And if you draw out to the hungry your soul, what does that mean? Nice poetry. What does it mean? We couldn't have a discussion on Dake Noam, on a good word, without bringing something from Rav Pan, who is the master of goodness, of sweetness, master of so many things. But the Darkei Noam, the love that he generated in Klal Yisrael, just phenomenal. Listen to his words in regard to the Baal Chesed. Rav Pan writes, "Yesh neshama shemesugeres besoch haguf." There is a soul that is enclosed within the body, within the confines of physicality. Va'asuka rak bitzarcheha v'inyonim hashayachim lo. And deals, this soul deals with matters of its need and things that are related to it. V'yesh neshama ila'a. And then there is a higher soul. Hamakifa neshamas harbe, which encompasses many other souls. V'hi misromemes mitocha anochios. And it exalts itself, this soul, over egocentrism. Lahamtik es achayim shel kol ish v'isha, to sweeten the life of every man and woman. You know, if you had the zuchus to sit with a gadol, a truly great person, for any length of time, and to see the sweetness, the goodness that they generate, to the extent that they possibly can. Zehu ha'or ha'eloki ha'meir ba'adam. This is an expression of the divine light that illuminates a person. So v'safek La'ra'ev nafshecha. You draw out to the poor person your soul. You elevate your soul when you give to that poor person. What is the understanding? How is that soul elevated? And what is the outcome? It's right before Hanukkah. So I just want to remind you of a Rambam. And with this we'll conclude. The Rambam is talking about the various mitzvos of Purim. Did I say Hanukkah? Yes. It's getting late. I'm getting tired too. So at the very end, thank you. The very end of Hilchas Megillah, the Rambam says these famous words: "Mutav la'odom laharbus b'matanos la'evyonim." It is preferable for a person to increase his matanos la'evyonim, his gifts to the poor, mila harbos b'su'udaso, from increasing, from his spending on his su'uda, on his meal, another one of the mitzvos. Uvishloach manos l'reyav, and sending gifts to his friends. So the Rambam rates them, and he says the number one mitzvah, at least in terms of expenditure, is matanos le'evyonim, when we sit down to plan out our Purim. It's a short day. The gains from that day are so pregnant with possibility Purim. We should plan it out ahead of time. Plan out the mitzvahs. How are we going to fulfill them? So he says, when you sit down to map it out, you have to understand matanos le'evyonim. That's number one. Why? Listen to his words: She'ein simcha gedola u'mefo'ara elu l'sameach lev ha'aniyim v'yisomim v'almanos v'geirim. Because there is no greater and more beautiful mitzvah than to gladden the heart of the downtrodden. Shehamasameach lev ha'umlolim ha'elu, one who gladdens the heart, who brings joy to the heart of these downtrodden people, dome l'shechina. He or she is reflective of God. Sheneemar, as it says about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'hachios ruach shefolim u'l'hachios lev nidkoy. Because when you bring joy to the heart of the downtrodden, you dome l'shechina. Please note, the Rambam doesn't only say it is a more beautiful simcha, he says it's a greater simcha. You make a sudas pur. You have prime rib. You get the best bottle of scotch. And you're sitting there with all of your friends. And Be'ezus Hashem, it should be a great Adar and a great Purim, and nothing should mar it, God forbid. And you're going to sit there and have Sudas Purim. That's Simcha. No. That's Simcha. That's not Simcha. You know what the greatest Simcha is? When a person is Dome L'Shechina. When a person's soul actualizes itself. When a person acts godly and draws close to God, that's the neshama ilo'a that Rav Palm was talking about. That's what happens when a person gives. That's the greatest simcha. So how is this neshama ilo'a arrived at? It's arrived at by being dome l'shechina. So to wrap it up, Maves v'chayim v'yad haloshon. Maves, we know about Maves, but chayim v'yad haloshon, it's a spoon. We can give general chiyus to a person, we can give general chizuk to a person on a day-to-day basis. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, there are those close to us who need our encouragement, who need our love. They're waiting for that sviya. They're waiting for that satiation. Very often it's only we, a parent, a child, a friend, a sibling. It's only we that can do it. And when we do that, we serve them with chiyus mamish, with chayim mamish. The doctor in the surgery room that brought somebody back to life should be a model for every single one of us. Because what's incumbent upon us, what we can do, is no less than the life-giving work that he did at that time. We should be zocher to have a Purim with Breit Simcha. Well, we're working through this fourth module of Avas Chesed to increase, to draw out, as the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, that neshama ilah. And we should be zocha all together to have very great simchas. Thank you once again.